Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Bill Yassas was the White House pastry chef from 2007 to 2014, hired by First Lady Laura Bush in baking under the Obamas, working with First Lady Michelle Obama on her Let's Move campaign, specifically by increasing the use of fresh, natural ingredients in desserts and decreasing the portion size and the amount of refined sugar. Since leaving Washington, D.C., Yassas has opened The Perfect Pie in New York City, and since February, he's provided the pre-show pies for the off-Broadway production of Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street. The Sweet Spot is a new cookbook, co-written by Bill and Peter Kaminsky, and featuring wonderful photographs by Evan Sung. Bill Yassas joins us now. Bill, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks for having me.
When did you learn that you would want to be a baker, that you would want to tackle this zany world of food?
I was already working. I had graduated from college and was working in New York and sort of baking at home. And I just started to get, I was a French major in school. I should back up a little bit. So I had a lot of French friends. They would invite me over and make these meals that were like right out of Escoffier. In return for me to invite them back to my apartment, you know, it didn't seem right. So I started baking and cooking, really. And a friend of mine's husband worked in a very good French restaurant in New York. And I had heard about internships in restaurants. So I asked if I could do an internship, and he arranged it. There was nothing available in the kitchen, but there was in the bake shop. So I did that, and I just got kind of bitten by the bug. And it was a fantastic pastry chef. His name was Jean-Pierre Lemasson. He's gone now, but a wonderful man. It just really inspired me to delve into baking.
You were hired by First Lady Laura Bush to be the White House pastry chef. How does that job come to you? Are you sought out by staff? Is there an application process? How does that happen?
No application. For one thing, it sort of fell upon them suddenly, because the person who had the job before me retired, and he had been there 25 years. So they were sort of like, oh my God, who's going to make the cookies now? So I think they just picked up some magazines, food magazines, and I happened to have, like, there was a picture of a dessert that I had made in one of them. And they asked me and four or five other chefs to come and do a tasting or like a tryout. And after that, they offered me the job.
You stayed for about 7 years, working
That's
under
right.
the Obamas as well. What made you decide to leave?
Well, I really became very inspired by Mrs. Obama's Let's Move program, which was her initiative towards health and wellness around food. And we had been going to schools, and she famously planted the garden on the South Lawn. And I was really enjoying that part of it, the outreach part, but I couldn't do very much when I was at the White House. It's quite restrictive, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to spend more time doing that. I thought I could do a better job of it outside the White House, a more, like, you know, commitment to it. And also, there's a thing in Washington where, at least in the civil service, which that job was, where people, I think, tend to stay too long. And I had a very good assistant pastry chef, Susie Morrison, who now is the pastry chef at the White House. And she was fantastic. And I didn't want to be that kind of person that just stands in somebody's way for years and years, you know. So we encouraged her to apply for the job, and she did, and she got it.
You said it was restrictive. Is that because you have to be available whenever they need you to bake something?
Well, yeah, there's that. But what I really meant was there's so much scrutiny. Even for the chefs, imagine what it is for the principal. But for the chefs, like, you really have to be careful about, you know, you can't really do interviews unless they're prearranged and kind of pre-screened. And so I couldn't go out and talk about education and health and wellness around food, which is the thing that I really was committed to and started to love and wanted to do more of. Yeah, I just felt it was time. That was the restriction, was mostly that, you know, you can't really do public kind of conversations around topical subjects.
Topical subjects, which are covered in your book, The Sweet Spot, which is co-written with Peter Kaminsky. How did you mm-hmm. connect with Peter and both decide to work on this book?
I had met Peter years before. I wrote a book with Brian Miller, who was the restaurant critic for the Times for many years and remained a good friend. And Peter knew him through the writers' community. And oddly enough, when I went to work at the White House, one day Peter came up to me in the state dining room, and he and his brother were producing the PBS series of music at the White House that the Obamas had started. I mean, there was like Santana and Usher and all the greatest music makers of the age. And Peter was, he's just kind of, you know, shuffling around like, oh yeah, I produced this show. And so I, you know, we just like really hung out after that and figured out we should do a book.
You're talking so far about healthy food, about desserts being able to be better for you. What are the main tenets of your philosophy as you put it forward in the book?
Yeah, so I call it the seven pillars of baking wisdom, modestly so, aligning myself with T.E. Lawrence. certainly lower sugar. I mean, that's the primary one. And I feel not only is there a health reason for lowering the sugar in desserts, it's a gastronomic reason also, because it blurs the other flavors. I think it muddies the other flavors. And if you put less sugar, and you can't just do it willy-nilly. I mean, that's why we tested all the recipes in the book. The other flavors come out. The flavors of the grains, whether it's wheat or millet or quinoa or chia, fruit flavors come out more strongly. And so we sort of tried to develop almost a palette of sour and bitterness to sort of emphasize what parts of sour and bitterness when paired with the right amount of sugar, can be satisfying and delicious. That was our game there. We really delved in deeply to, as I say, test the recipes, and I think we succeeded in making a kind of a new flavor profile.
You mentioned some of the ingredients you just listed and many others in the book are ingredients that would typically be considered part of a main meal. You have like oils and herbs that mightn't necessarily be associated with dessert.
That's right. That was part of our strategy, is that if we say like the people are used to eating desserts which are maybe high in sugar and fats. So if you're going to try to replace, and I have nothing against either one, I have to keep emphasizing that.
Sure.
Butter and fats, fine, but they get overused. And so we try to reduce butter and fats. But if you're going to do that, there's a certain satisfaction in losing some of that, the mouthfeel of a buttery crust, or the high sugar content, which kind of gives you a rush. So we wanted to, what I call, distract the palate with other flavors and other ingredients that were sometimes surprising, or at least lent like other layers of flavor. So we used herbs. I love tarragon in desserts. I love rosemary in desserts. All these kind of floral flavors which help bring out a different layer, a different nuance in dessert. And then we also use spices. We bring a lot of spices in, Chinese spices, and things like cumin and coriander, and things that you wouldn't maybe normally find in dessert. Then we used, one of our tricks also was to use essential oils. So my dear friend Mandy Aftel has a company that started out as a perfume company, but now she sells very high-grade, food-grade essential oils of just about anything you can imagine, any plant you can imagine. So there was like bitter orange and pine sap and all these fantastic things that we don't always associate with food, but which lend a really interesting nuance. And the point of that is that if you're going to have less sugar and less fat, you want to have other things there, like to wake the palate up and like, oh, wow, okay, it maybe not be as good as Dunkin' Donuts, but there's something else going on. So that was our theory, and I think we succeeded.
Is it years of experience and experimentation and food science knowledge that helps you determine that these things will be good and will appeal to many people?
I want to say yes. I mean, there is all those things, but basically it's trusting your palate. And eating everything. I mean, whenever I have students and they say, well, you know, what's the one thing that I should know to be a better chef? And I say, taste everything you eat. And it's, which sounds weird because you think that all chefs do. I mean, that's the image of, you know, the little spoon dipping into a, like, 20-gallon vat of sauce or something. But it's amazing how many chefs don't taste their food as they go along. It's really, it's the only way to know what you're doing.
I am personally not much in the kitchen. I'm slowly, slowly trying to be a little bit better, be able to make some more things. So when I opened your book, I thought, maybe I'll, before I talk to Bill, I'll make one of these things. And I didn't, because I was immediately very intimidated by all of the recipes, with the caveat again that I'm new to experimenting in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So I was hoping you would tell me, and presumably there are other people out there like me, why we shouldn't be intimidated by these expert seeming recipes, if we shouldn't.
Yeah, you definitely should not be intimidated. And we do, maybe what could be, you know, at first glance off-putting is that we try to really make it step by step. So we sort of, as we went along, saw like, oh, this could, you know, you could make a mistake here. So we added a line like, if this happens, do this. They're quite detailed in that sense. Maybe that's off-putting to a novice cook. But the reason for that is that we try to guide the person really step by step. But there's nothing you could have said that would make me happier than that you wanted to make the things in the book.
Oh, of course.
That's
no, and I will. I just, this weekend, I was like, oh, not today.
I understand totally, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, I face this all the time. I just tell people, you just plunge in. I mean, what could go wrong? I've been doing it for 40 years, so, you know, I know the tricks. I know how to correct something that's maybe gone awry, whereas a novice cook and chef or baker doesn't. But if you're using good ingredients and you're paying attention, you don't leave it until it's a piece of charcoal in the oven. I mean, really, not that much can go wrong, you know? I mean, it's good food, it's good ingredients. You more or less follow the recipe or not. And it all comes together. That's the wonderful thing about heat and organic ingredients. It kind of all melts together. Yeah, of course, you know, recipe is there so that it looks good when it comes out of the oven. It can't look that bad. I mean, for one thing, there's not that many ingredients in our recipes. Like I'm a very, you know, I love tinkering. I love adding layers. But I really did try to simplify these recipes. And Peter was a great, and the editor, Pam Krause, who was wonderful, also, like, really, you know, forced us to limit the number of ingredients and the exoticism of some of the ingredients, which, so I can tell you it was a lot worse before Pam got her hands on it, if that's any encouragement. But Pam was wonderful, and each time she explained, like, you know, people don't want to go, you know, to the store every 5 minutes or look for these things. So we tried to, we did take an effort to simplify things. And one other person who I have to give a shout out to was Kathleen Hackett, who was our recipe tester and muse, and gave us a lot of great feedback and a lot of good ideas for desserts.
The book is entitled The Sweet Spot, Dialing Back Sugar and Amping Up Flavor. We only have a little bit of time left, but I would be remiss if I didn't speak to you briefly about your in-house residency at the Barrow Street Theater, providing pre-show pies for the off-Broadway production of Sweeney Todd. How did you get that gig?
Yeah, that was where we cook humans. it was, you know, I opened up, when I moved back to New York after leaving the White House, I opened a pie shop. And so that's not a term that I think most people think of. It's usually a bakery or a pastry shop, but
right.
I called it a pie shop. And so the producers who were in New York at the time, a year before they opened, looking for a place, a venue to do their version of Sweeney Todd, that was the same week that the article came out that I'd opened this shop. So it was kind of serendipity that, you know, they said, oh, they gave me a call and like, oh, do you want to make the pies for our Sweeney Todd? Which I did not immediately say yes to, because I had just opened this company and I'm like, I don't know if people are going to want to buy pies from the same person that, you know, makes Mrs. Lovett's recipes. But they did, and it's helped the business immensely, and as you saw, we have a great time there. We have a chance to talk to the audience members, and so we, you know, plug the pies, and now I'll be plugging the book because we're face to face with 130 people a night. So that it's really been fun, and everybody involved has been just charming and wonderful, and it's a really wonderful version of Sweeney Todd. We serve the pie an hour before the show starts in the what is a recreated pie shop from London, and the performance takes place on the tables then, and they dance and sing and kill each other on the table.
It is an incredible experience that I will not soon forget, as has been this conversation with you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Great fun. It seems so short, it's over already, but thanks for having me on.
The Sweet Spot, Dialing Back Sugar and Amping Up Flavor by Bill Yossis and Peter Kaminsky is available now. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.